This is the Indie Dads Podcast. I'm Malcolm.
And I'm Brian.
And we're a couple of dads sharing our journey about starting out and bootstrapping our indie businesses while still prioritizing our young families. We believe that you can bootstrap a successful SaaS, freelance, or indie business while still enjoying the family life.
Join us as we share our learnings from building our businesses from scratch. All right. Welcome to episode two.
Episode two. Well, Brian, I think episode two is a little bit different than episode one because I don't know about you. When we recorded the first episode, it was like it's just the two of us talking without any real expectation. It's a little bit different this time. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I was a bit surprised by the reception we got. I thought, yeah. You know, a couple of parents talking about our experience, and I thought maybe we'd get 10 or 15 if we really pushed. And man, it's been really fun to see the reaction, and makes me feel like maybe we need to plan a little bit better, like you're talking about. So I think this one will be a little bit more organized.
Yeah, well, shout out to the Indie Hackers community. We got a very good reception there on the forum post that you made. I think it does put a bit of a different spin, I think. Feel a little bit more pressured to actually say something useful. But yeah, I think the intention is just to keep it loose and just share what we're building. And it's great to hear that there are other people that are thinking like us and want to hear what we have to say.
Yeah, there's so many. I still can't believe, I shouldn't be surprised. I guess nobody should. There's so many people that are trying to do it. You can't always get it done when you're in your, you know, right out of college. So there's probably a lot more parents trying to do this than not. So
for our listeners who are interested in actual statistics and in the interest of building in public, what are the first episode stats look like?
Here we are 2 weeks after the first episode, and according to our podcast host here, we've got 146 people that have downloaded. Well, I don't know if it's people, but at least downloads of the first episode, plus 76 views on the YouTube channel, which I was a little surprised by. I mean, maybe people just want to see who we are, see what we're like. Maybe some of those people listened and watched. I don't know, but that's pretty cool. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we were talking around like the YouTube thing, and it was almost an afterthought. You know, we was like, well, we have the recording, so we might as well. I don't think there were any expectations from that distribution channel. And it turns out a lot of people like video. How cool is that?
Well, and you know, I'm no movie star. I don't know about you, but I wasn't really excited about putting a video up out there. But you know, like they say, just throw stuff out there and see what people like. And so that's what we did. Pretty cool to see. Cool. So just a little review from last episode, right? We introduced ourselves a little bit, talked pretty high level about what we're working on, why we're here, a little bit about our background. But in this episode, I think we wanted to go in depth a little bit more and walk through where we're at, you know, exactly in our journey and kind of what's next and how we got to the idea, progress so far and things like that. I'm at a kind of weird place. I think that my explanation is going to take a little bit longer and maybe earn a little bit more scrutiny, and we'll discuss it a little bit more. Not that I'm special, but I'm kind of at a crossroads right now. So maybe we, if you don't mind, start with you and your where you're at, and then we'll go to mine later.
Sure. So I think the thinking was just a little bit of backstory in terms of how we got to where we are now, because I think there's a lot of people out there that they have full-time jobs or they're really interested into the SaaS thing. Maybe they discovered it late. You know, I was very well into my career before I discovered that my love of product actually translated into a love of building companies and building products and software as a service and that kind of thing. So maybe a little bit more in depth of how we got to remote time, and just a quick correction. On the first episode, I pointed everyone to remotetime.com. It turns out my website is not that. If anybody's got $3,000 that they want to buy the domain, but it's actually remotetime.net, which is the actual product download page. So yeah, how did I get to freelancing? Well, I think probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I really discovered, like, came up with a product idea that I thought would monetize really well. And it wasn't remote time. It was something called Holler Services, which is basically taking the Uber business model that they have for ride sharing and making it generic. So giving any business, and particularly small to medium enterprises, the ability to give their customers a mobile app kind of user experience, to be able to request a service and to have these mobile field operators being tracked and being given tasks, and you know, the customer being able to see the progress of the service that they've requested. And you know, I've mentioned in the last episode there was a whole discussions around investors and all these kinds of things. But eventually figured out I was on that for about 2 or 3 years, built up an MVP, well, what I thought was an MVP. And I will say that before I wrote a line of code, I did do customer interviews. So one particular one that I can think of is there's a local company that repairs, does auto repairs, but they do it, they have these mobile vans that travel about. And I, when the guy arrived at my driveway to fix my car, I could just see they had this manual process of, you know, getting invoices to you and getting payments and all sorts of things. So I actually made an appointment with the owner of the company. It's a franchise business here in South Africa, so they have quite a few branches throughout the country. And as I was talking to him and explaining to him what I kind of plan on building, he immediately jumped out of his chair and said, "Why haven't you made me sign a non-disclosure agreement? This sounds exactly like what we need." So, of course, that got me very excited, and I went away and started building and giving some feedback. But very quickly discovered, being a parent and having a full-time job that pays the bills, building a marketplace product that has three different apps across two or three different platforms, that's quite a big undertaking. And of course, having been very new into what it, you know, how to define a minimal viable product and how to make that as small as possible, I kind of went all in on quite a big part of the scope. So I eventually got a little bit of, I guess, tired of building this thing without any customer feedback. Because I just wasn't getting there fast enough. And, you know, I think the idea is still very exciting to me, but I'm not personally invested in it. So I kind of took a little bit of a reflective look on it and thought, well, I need to build something small that fits the timeline that I can invest in building a product on the side while I still am not sacrificing time with my family. And, you know, I've still got to put food on the table, which means a normal 9 to 5, 5 days a week. And I had just gotten, you know, with all the thinking around software, at the same time, I decided to make a career change as well. So I was fairly senior in the company I was working with. It's a big enterprise company. And I decided to take a remote job as a developer, but within a company that is specifically doing software as a service so that I could learn from the ground up. That was still paying the bills, but it meant I was freelancing and logging my time and invoicing and all that kind of thing. So it was kind of coincidental at the time where I was doing like task management in Excel and submitting my timesheet in a different online app. And then when it came to invoicing, all of those had to kind of be collated. So there was all these disjointed things. And of course, being a developer, I thought, well, maybe I could build this. Even though there are pieces of software out there that do all of those things, you know, you always, I guess, as a developer, have a unique way of the way you would like things to work. And I think that was what got me excited, is the addressable market of freelancers is just so big. And of course, I didn't know that COVID was coming, that was going to accelerate the whole world of remote work. And I just thought, well, you know, I guess I have some unique ideas in terms of user experience and mobile first design and that kind of thing. And it was small enough that I could build something in a relatively short period of time to be able to ship. So I did a pivot from Holo Services. I still own all of the domains that I bought and plan on one day, on a rainy day, to go back to that maybe. But for now, it's been, I think, and some people will be shocked at hearing this, and from one my reading on Indie Hackers, some people will not. It's been just a little over two years building Remote Time. A little bit of insight in terms of how I tackled that. You know, I'm on a shoestring budget, so I couldn't really go all in on cloud and monthly subscription services to get this up and running without people actually paying for what I was building. So the first version of the app was paid. So you could buy it and then use it to invoice customers and track your time and log your tasks and everything. I very quickly found out that didn't work out so well for customer acquisition, because the way the world works is most people want to try things before they buy it. So the whole free trial before you buy for an upfront purchase on mobile app stores is, you know, you can't really do that in a simple way. So that kind of didn't get the users that I thought it would. And I also didn't, because of the time constraints, I didn't spend a lot of time actually getting involved in communities or doing any kind of marketing. So the old adage of build it and they will come is completely false. I have a much more, even though I did study marketing, you know, and all the theory, I have a much better appreciation of actually having built something, of how important it is to speak to your users and get like a decent amount of interaction with them, even though you haven't built what you think is the minimal viable product. So that didn't work out. So I spent quite a bit of time building in subscriptions and online storage and authentication and making all those things work. And as of April, I think, yes, April, I released a version with all of those built in, and I've since iterated. So our normal every 2 weeks feedback, when we give product feedback, these last 2 weeks I've just basically refined some of the features in terms of tracking your time and making it more simple. And I guess I feel like only now in the last couple of weeks I've reached ground zero, where it's like, okay, well, you don't have a choice now, Malcolm. You've got to start talking to people about what you've built. Otherwise, you're not going to get much traction on this.
So for someone like me that hasn't really used it, walk me through what you can do in the app. Obviously, you can track time. Sounds like you can send invoices. What's the scope of your project?
Yeah. So, I mean, in retrospect, I probably spent way too much time on fine-tuning. You know, I really should have released a lot more raw of a version. But if you download the app and you install it, you get no questions asked onboarding. You don't have to sign up for an account or anything like that. You create your profile, you create your first client, and then immediately on the base page of the app, I've separated out punching in, punching out. So when you're on the clock and when you're not. And then on that same screen, you can very quickly and very simply add what you're busy with. And then you have a choice of, while you're working, to match up the time that you're spending on a task with the time that you've spent working. Or if you come at the end of the day and you just press stop on the punch out, and it turns out you've worked 8 hours of the day, you can go through your tasks and kind of just roughly estimate how much time you spent on each task. And then it has like a little matching user experience that says, okay, well, all of your task time should really match up with how much billable time that you've been working today. It kind of helps with that. And then as you go through your day, assigning tasks to clients and working like that, you can, when you come to an end of a billable period, you can just press a button that says, generate me an invoice for this client. Give it a period and it spits out an invoice that it will use your native email app to attach the PDF invoice to and send it off.
So the idea is you can do all your time tracking and invoicing just from an app. You don't have to install anything. You don't have to go to the web somewhere. You just do it all on your phone sitting right next to you. I know that, you know, when it comes to freelancing, a lot of freelancers do hourly billing and then a lot of them do project billing. So do you handle both of those or is it just hourly right now?
Yeah, so it's kind of generic. So you can choose whether you're going to add hours to your tasks or not. So obviously if you bill per hour, then add the hours to your tasks. But if you just charge on a project basis on the work that you need to deliver in the generate invoice process, you can just zero out your hours and then it'll allow you to edit the amount that you're charging. And your invoice will reflect that. So it's really when you're generating the invoice that you can decide how you want to charge the client.
Cool. I don't mean to throw you off too bad here, but now I've got all these questions that going around in my mind. Having released things in the App Store myself, it's like throwing a sardine in the ocean. Like how do you get people to notice it in this sea of apps out there? What's your plan and thoughts about that?
Well, that's a really good question. So as I said, I'm only really now getting to the point of where I'm taking marketing seriously. And I think that's where if you're releasing on the web, SEO, as far as I can see, is a lot easier to achieve than ASO. So search engine optimization for web, there's a lot of documentation on that. But App Store optimization is a little bit harder to get people to your app. And I think that's one of the cons of doing native applications is the commitment to download something on your device. Your materials for getting people there have to be quite convincing, where a web page, you just land on it and you can see what it's all about. So I don't have any answers there. That's, I guess, hopefully going to be some of the feedback as we go through our podcast episodes. I can relate to this channel worked and that channel didn't. And for anybody that's listening, if you have any suggestions, feel free to drop us a line or send us an email or what your thoughts are. But yeah, I think the intention is over the next couple of weeks is to be a little bit more involved in communities, to have a look at materials like onboarding videos, things that don't involve actually downloading the app. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Cool. The nice thing about your app is, and your idea is the same reason that it drew me in, as far as freelancers and invoicing goes, it's been done before. So you're not inventing something totally new that you still have to validate and see if people even want it. You know, people want it. And what you're looking to validate is your twist on invoicing and timekeeping, right? So, and that's the hard part about those of us that can build, like the engineers and the developers, getting the marketing started. It's a little overwhelming, at least from my perspective. It's like, man, you try things and then hopefully, a month, 2-3 months down the road, it pays off. But it's not like engineering where it's a little bit closer to math where you add one and one, you get two. It either works or it doesn't.
And it's very definitely a skill in terms of, I mean, I've never been a social animal. I consider myself an introvert. I recharge when I'm alone and when I'm around people, it drains my energy, even though I love one-on-one conversations and, talking with people. It's just that takes effort and energy. So, putting yourself out in the open and talking to people that you wouldn't ordinarily, being purposeful in getting into contact with them. That's, it's a little bit daunting, but I think if you're serious about getting your product out there, then you kind of have to overcome those challenges. And I think, there's a lot of people who feel that.
Yeah. One of the things that made it a little less mysterious for me was Justin Jackson's book. He has a book called Marketing for Developers. So specifically targeted at exactly what we're talking about. And yes. He basically says marketing is really just getting in front of as many eyeballs as you can, but not just any eyeballs, the eyeballs that actually want to solve the problem that you solve. So it's really just a matter of getting in front of eyeballs. So how do you do that? And how do you get in front of the right eyeballs? And when you think about it that simply, it's a little less intimidating. Then it's just figuring out, okay, how do I get in front of eyeballs? And doing it in a way where it doesn't feel like used car salesman. And if it doesn't, you're doing it wrong. I think, you're trying to convince someone to use something that they don't need if it feels that way.
And that's exactly right. I think what you're thinking, normally your developer mind thinking is, well, most of the effort is in building it. And when I build it, I can just tell people about it and they're going to use it. Well, in fact, you know, marketing takes a lot of effort. And as you mentioned just now, it can take months before the things that you are doing, you start seeing any traction on those channels. So, and I think that's the challenge for indie hackers that have full-time jobs. You have so little time in the week. You know, I work on remote time between 8 or 10 hours a week, depending on how my week goes, to kind of strike that balance between getting the product ready enough so that when you tell people that there's something for them to use, or just put head down, you know, the whole way and then tell people about it later. And I think that's an art in and of itself, is how do you balance that time and when do you tell people? Because, you know, there's a lot of advice being thrown around, like build an audience and put a web page there and make people sign up with their credit card to validate your idea. And I think for a lot of things, that's very valid. But for a known market like we're in, you know, I didn't feel like that was necessary right at the beginning. For sure, I could have done, you know, like market and customer engagement much sooner, but that's not something I would have thrown a web page up for.
Yeah. There's an article that I'm kind of thinking about writing in the back of my head. And I think, if I were to write it, I would call it "Your Baby is Ugly," or maybe "Your Startup Baby is Ugly." Every parent thinks that their child is the most beautiful thing in the world, you know, that they don't see the awkward, you know, awkward parts about their child or their baby that everybody else sees. So you go to bed, you know, dreaming about your startup, thinking about all the ways that it can help people and this and that. But to everyone else, your baby's ugly. And so the only way to make your baby look better, you know, to use that metaphor, I guess, is to get it out there and just get some feedback. And unlike real babies, you can make changes and you can, you know, make it more attractive, because you're not going to know how attractive or unattractive it really is unless you get it out there. So congrats to you for getting it even launched. I mean, that's a huge milestone.
Thanks, man. That's an interesting thing as well. I've kind of felt the opposite with that. I keep on wanting to show people the baby and them to tell me how ugly it is, but they don't. It's very, very difficult to get honest feedback from people. I think also getting your product in front of the right people also counts a lot. I was listening to a podcast today from Arvid Carl. I think it's episode 2 of his bootstrapping podcast. We'll link it in the show notes. And he goes in depth in terms of getting in front of the right people and asking the right questions. But man, getting that honest feedback is hard. Everybody wants to be nice. They want to say, "Oh, it looks so good," and "I like how you do this." But it's very, very difficult to get the feedback from the right people on, "Man, you know, it sucks. Your time tracking just doesn't make sense for my scenario, and this is why." And I think that's an art to ask the right people the right questions, and get that feedback.
Another resource that's good that speaks about exactly that is the Mom Test, the book, The Mom Test.
Yes. Number one on my reading list.
Yes, it is fantastic, because people probably will never tell you that your baby's ugly. They will beat around the bush. So you shouldn't ask it really. You shouldn't be asking, "Is my baby ugly?" You should be asking about what they like about babies and which babies they're, you know, that sort of thing. So
Yes.
Good plug for that book. I think it's worth its weight in gold.
100%. So, Brian, Freelance Sugar, tell us a little bit about what were your thought processes around there. And I think that leads in quite well in terms of our discussion this week on where you spend your time and how you should go about doing that.
Yeah, so I'm at a really interesting point right now. I kind of talked about this in the last episode a little bit, just to give a quick summary. I quit my job at Amazon as a software development manager about 2 months ago, 6 weeks or so. And technically, I'm on a one-year sabbatical, a year-long sabbatical. That's the amount of runway that I've given myself to kind of rest, recharge, regroup. This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me. Obviously, I can't just go take a year off all the time, but I've been doing this for 20 years. And I figured, you know, if I don't do this now, I'm never going to. So I'm going to take a break and regroup and decide what I want to do next. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to pursue what I've always wanted to, which is start my own software company. And a year is not very long. It's almost definitely not long enough to get something off the ground, which is hard to hear and think about because you're like, man, a whole year should be plenty of time. But when it comes to momentum and getting things rolling, it takes time. You can't just release it, like you said, and have something working. So, you know, in the past, I've tried to build so many things on the side, and nothing's taken off. And a big part of that was not something I regret, but a big part of that was family priorities. They were my priority. They are my priority. And so you go to work during the day, you get home, you spend time with family. And then maybe if you're not exhausted, you work in the evenings for a couple of hours. And I was able to release over the years, you know, 3, 4, 5 things that just didn't take off. So now I had this really unique chance to build something that could get the ball rolling enough to eventually sustain me. And one of the ways that I will probably extend my runway is doing freelancing. I've been doing freelancing since I was, you know, first married, I guess, or even before that, I suppose, in college. And a lot of us do it. There are a lot of people that try to balance family life plus freelancing plus working on some side gig or some side project, excuse me. And, you know, it's really hard. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity and I don't want to squander it, but I've already made a mistake in this amount of time that I've been full-time and that I've had off. And that mistake is biting off way more than I can chew in terms of scope. I got a little ambitious, a little bold, and thought, well, I've got this year, I've got plenty of runway in terms of like time to build. And I didn't obviously count enough time for marketing, but I'm going to build a whole suite of apps for freelancers. This is going to just blow their socks off. It's going to differentiate me from everyone else. It's going to be the thing that sets this apart and that would make this something that they want to use as opposed to Harvest or any of these other tools that are already out there. And honestly, after it was fun at first, it was exciting, but it was also overwhelming after too long because it was a lot of stuff to do. And you never realize, like, even if you try to build something really small, say something that you can build in 2 weeks, it still takes a long time after that to do all the testing and the bug fixes and all the little stuff that you didn't think about while you were building with the site, like the help documentation, the contact us page, and all these little things that add up. And so there's no such thing as like, that's why we're so bad at estimating. We forget, you know, as in general, as an industry, we forget about all the little things and we're way too optimistic about how long things are going to take. And so for a guy like me who has never made a significant amount of money from a single SaaS, I was pretty bold and I realized that was just way too ambitious and I needed to scale way, way back. So, you know, at the same time, I've been talking to potential customers and talking to people that would want to or need to use this type of thing that I was building, which was time tracking, invoicing, client portal, all those sorts of things. And I was getting conflicting information about what part they wanted the most. Some people would say they wanted the client portal. Some people would say they wanted just invoicing and time tracking and things like that. So it's like, man, even if I scale way back, I have to pick one. And which one should I go with? And that's kind of been a difficult decision. So I could just start with one thing. I could just start with invoicing or whatever, time tracking, and make it awesome. Another option that I have is I could launch a bunch of small projects and see which one gets the most momentum. I've kind of talked about that on Twitter a little bit. Like, there are people that have done an app a month and they launched it. And then maybe 3 or 4 apps in, they realize, oh, this is the one that I like. This is the one that's getting some traction. I'm going to double down on that. Now, the risk with that, of course, is divided attention. Instead of spending all your time on one thing, you're spending a quarter of your time on 4 things. And so while that might help you find something that you can double down on faster, it could also be wasted time if the first thing that you're doing was good enough. So long story short, after all of that, that's kind of the background. 2 weeks ago, right after our last podcast, where I introduced what I was doing and working on, I kind of had a heart-to-heart existential kind of crisis with myself. And I decided a couple of things. One, I decided that, like I said, this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me, this sabbatical that I'm on. Part of it is to spend more time with family, but part of it is to launch something, and I'll never get to do this again. So I don't want to spend the entire time stressed out. I want to have fun. And two, even though I have committed publicly on Twitter, on Indie Hackers, here on the podcast, other places that I'm launching for something for freelancers, nobody's as invested in my own success or journey or adventure as I am. So although I love everybody that I talk to on Twitter and here and Indie Hackers and those sorts of places, I don't technically like owe anyone anything, right? So I shouldn't do it just because I told people, you know, I'm going to do it. So in other words, I'm allowed to change my mind. And, you know, more than anything, I want to launch something quickly. I want to get something out there, ideally in less than a month, that I can get people to actually use and then iterate on, because that's to me what's the most fun, is getting actual feedback from people using it instead of theoretical feedback. Like when we're just talking about what if, I want to see them use it and see the weird ways that they use it and iterate and, you know, get real feedback. And I more than anything want to take a stair step approach. You know, there's crawl, walk, run. I was trying to run from day one. So rookie mistake. Yeah. So, I realized that.
So how does that work for you, Brian, in terms of the decision on diverting your attention to potentially another product, or whether it's 80, how does it work? 80%, 20% all at the same time, or work a little bit more for 2 or 3 weeks full on this new idea and see if I get any traction. And if I don't, I go back. Mm-hmm. Do you look at potential revenue model and addressable markets? How do you interview customers first before you start working on it? How are you thinking around these multiple projects at the same time?
Well, what I've decided is that I want to spend a little bit more time collecting data, information about my main project, my swing for the fences kind of project, which is the suite of apps for freelancers. And while I'm doing that, one of the things that I asked on Twitter kind of in a joking way is, am I allowed to have side projects? Because technically I'm doing this full time. You know, I quit my job to do this, but is it stupid for me to have a side project? And I thought, you know, that kind of goes back to my first point of this, which is I want to have fun. Obviously I want to build something that makes money, but I want to have fun. So I'm giving myself, I guess you could say, permission to spend a little bit of time on the side, and I'm not being too scientific about it right now. Now, I might be wasting this time. I might be throwing away a couple of weeks, but at the same time, if I only take 2 or 3 weeks and launch something that I think might be fun and might show promise while I gather information to continue to talk about the main thing that I originally wanted to build, then that's okay. I'm kind of burying the lead here about what that is. I guess maybe I should talk about that. But, while, you know, freelancers are still my long game, it's as far as a bootstrapper goes, my swing for the fences kind of thing. I've actually been working on something else over the past 2 weeks, and it's been a blast.
Interesting. Yeah. And you've been dropping a couple of hints about domain names and how did that all go?
Yeah. So, it has to do with another passion of mine. And it actually came up when I was thinking about how do I want to market and start getting the word out about what I'm doing, the freelancer project, which I think is a couple of things. It's getting involved in freelancer communities, not to sell, but just to help through my experience. And then writing about the things that work for me. And that could be, I mean, I just really enjoy writing. I guess that's what I'm getting at. One of my other passions is writing. And I'm not saying I'm like an amazing author or anything like that. I've had a few things that have gotten to the top of Hacker News, a few things that have, you know, shown up at the top of Reddit, things like that over the years, a few small publications. But in other words, I think I'm a good enough writer to be able to share what I learned. But I also want to say you don't have to be good to write and to share what you learn. That's what a lot of people think. For sure. I just am pointing out that I enjoy it. So, and I'm not talking about like technical teaching. I'm not talking about, you know, how to connect to Postgres or something like that. I mean, teaching about how to lead, how to grow in your career, how to scale systems, things like that, or from the freelancer perspective, how to get clients, how to keep them happy, all those sorts of things. So I'm thinking about, okay, I want to write, I want to get some content out there and get it kind of baking in the SEO world, you know, in the search engines. And I start looking for some way to do that. I could either roll my own, I could do some WordPress thing, you know, all these other options that are out there. I thought, you know, like every other engineer, you know what, I could build this. I think there's something that every engineer...
A blessing and builds. A curse.
Yeah. Every engineer has built a blog and probably a to-do list and, you know, a few other things. So I thought, I'm gonna do this just for fun. I'm going to make this a weekend project. I'm going to build it just for fun. And while I'm out at it, if I can make it multi-tenant, if I can make it in a way where other people can use it too, then sure, why not? And then I started thinking about, well, what would make this different? What I look for when I like to write is honestly minimalism type or minimalist type blogs. I don't like the big flashy blogs. I don't like images all over the place. And I just want the text. I just want to read. I just want to write and I just want to read. And so what I've built over the past 2 weeks, and I'm just about done, I'm going to launch this week, is it's a minimalist blog. It's doesn't have to be text only. I'm not giving people the option to upload images, but if they want to link to another image somewhere else in their post, they can. It's think of it like a really simple, stripped down, text only blog. And that sounds easy, but it's actually really hard to build things in a minimalist way. In fact, that's been part of the fun, is like, instead of what can I add, it's what can I leave out as I'm building this interface, as I'm building this product. And so that's why it's been fun for me is, although I don't think I'm too bad of a designer, I haven't needed to, and I've been able to actually think about how to build less, which has helped me launch it super quick. So in two weeks, I've built this thing. It's got all sorts of features. I'll announce it on Twitter later this week and link to it if anyone wants to try it out. And it's going to be an ugly baby, like we talked about. But it's going to be launched. It's going to be out there. And I'm going to hopefully get people that want to try it and use it, and I'll make it better. And if it bombs and everyone's like, this is ridiculous, who wants a text-only blog? Or who wants a minimal blog like this? Well, yeah. I do. But if nobody else does, worst case is I've got a really cool framework for myself to use to write and to express myself that way and to tell my story.
So very quickly on a product like that, what is the end state? And I've learned now whenever, like, you know, I come up with 1,000 ideas a day, the first question I always ask is, what is the revenue model? Because I think there's a little bit of a differentiation between fun side projects, which you do. Like, I started off with a golf score manager because I love to play golf. And of course, the first thing I did was back in Windows Mobile 6.5 many moons ago, started writing a golf app that transferred over to Windows Phone 7 and eventually made it cross-platform. But it never really shipped anywhere because it was just a hobby. It's a side project that, you know, wasn't really... was for fun. There wasn't really a revenue model in mind, like this could be my full-time job. So does that thinking come into it for you?
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of this new place?
Yeah, because let's face it, blog platforms are kind of a commodity. There's a lot of them out there. There's still room for differentiation. There's still room to make your own corner of the world. But I think the trick is you have to be opinionated about what it should be and do. And in my case, it's text only. Or at least minimal. There's no designs. It's black and white text on a page. Really beautiful typography. You know, that's what makes it look appealing and fun to read. Yeah. It's not just going to be like Times New Roman, same font size. But it needs to be opinionated. It needs to stand out. And the other risk is that this is kind of, I mean, at best, the prosumer market is not B2B. Right. So it's people that aspire to write or want to get their story out there or teach. But they're not going to be the, you know, businesses that want to spend $100 a month on an app. It's maybe individuals that are willing to spend 10 bucks a month on an app. And so you're talking about needing to get a lot more individual users as opposed to a few big users. And, you know, Paul Graham recently tweeted, I wish I had a link to it. Maybe I'll link to it in the show notes. But he's basically saying, if you don't pay for something, you can't expect it to be around forever. Yeah, if it's exactly. free. It'll just disappear. Yeah. So I think it's reasonable to charge something for it, but there's no way that I'm going to be able to charge a lot. In some ways that's also attractive because you can kind of diversify. If you have a lot of customers that spend a little bit, if you can manage to do that, which is really hard, then you're diversified. If you lose a dozen, it's no big deal. Versus if you have very few big clients and you lose one, it kind of hurts. So It's definitely a risk. Exactly. It's definitely harder in different ways. But honestly, right now I'm kind of doing it because it's fun. I definitely see the, from someone like me, and I'm betting that there are a lot more people like me that want to write and don't want to mess with designs. They want to just get up and writing instantly. And they want it to look really good, but they don't want to have to worry about what it looks like or setting it up or any of that. They just want to start writing. So I'm betting that there's a lot more people like me. And there are other platforms that kind of do that. You know, Subtle's one. There's Medium. But I don't think, to answer kind of your original question as well, I hate that Medium penalizes readers for wanting to learn by putting up those paywalls. I think that's
ridiculous. Yeah, that is.
So that's not the way it should be. I think it should be there's probably a freemium model here, which has its own costs. But for people that want to make sure that their blog sticks around and that this business is sustainable, you know, I for one would be willing to pay a little bit per month or a certain amount per year in order to have a really beautiful looking blog that you know takes care of everything for me. So I'm not putting all my chips on this bet, but it's something that I'm going to throw out there and see if people find it as useful as I am, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mention it. I think we're possibly related in a previous life because we come up with the same ideas. And Brian doesn't know this, but I also have a passion for writing. In fact, one of the domains that I own is episodic.pub, which is basically the idea around writers publishing their works in an episodic kind of fashion, the way TV producers do. I dabbled a bit more in creative writing versus teaching writing, but I think the principle is the same. So I think there's definitely a big market of creatives out there that are looking for a simple interface to get their work done, and probably a community aspect in terms of getting feedback and we can go into very long discussions about this. And of course, you're going to get a bunch of emails that say, have you tried this product? And have you seen that website that does what you're talking about? But I guess that's the fun of building things, is discovering all these different things and collating all of these different ideas into something unique that a sub-community of people enjoy using.
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody's got their own twist on the world, and some people will gravitate towards one and towards the other. And I think that's why it's important to be opinionated as well. If you're just, no different than anyone else, and you don't take a stand on what it should be. For example, I'm purposely making it hard to upload images or add images to your post. I want it to be mostly text. Things like that. There are going to be people that hate that. They can't stand that. They think, well, images enhance the story and they make it look more attractive and stuff like that. And that's fine. So, I think there's room for lots of different ways of doing things. And this is just my take, I guess you could say, on it. So we'll see where it goes. Like I said, I'm not putting all my eggs in this one basket, but I'm going to throw it out there. It's only been a couple of weeks that it took to build the ugly baby version. I hope that doesn't offend anyone calling babies ugly, but I acknowledge that this one is not.
I don't think anyone will be.
This one is not going to be beautiful from day one, but we'll see.
And I think also to mention, for full transparency, ironically enough, I was advocating for you to focus on one thing on the Twitter thread, which is really ironic because we're in competing spaces, and here I am telling you not to leave the freelancing product. But on the flip side of the coin, I think, just to hatch on to what you were saying, is I think motivation and having fun is a big part of being able to spend your energy on these products and talking to people and everything, because there definitely is a whole bunch of boring things that go into building a SaaS product. And I've even gone against my own advice when I spent a fair amount of time building authentication and online storage and subscriptions. Those are not the fun parts of the app for me. I did have a weekend side project that I'm building nice user experiences and like these side projects that are fun to build. But I think it's helpful in terms of, and that's what you've done as well. You've time boxed it. You said, this is the amount of resources I'm willing just to explore this and to keep my energy up and to keep having fun. And hopefully with whatever comes out the other side, it makes a difference for the people that get to use what you've built.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's people screaming at their iPhone or whatever they're listening to right now. No, Brian, you're squandering your time. That's all right. Maybe I am. Maybe I'll come back and say, this was mistake number two that I made, but we'll see. We'll see. It's, for now, it's fun.
Yeah, no, I think that's the fundamental thing of what makes it exciting to build stuff is experimentation, right? You get to learn by doing. There's no one right answer. Some people will throw up a web page and a credit card, and that's good for them to build the audience first. And others will spend a bit more time building product and releasing it when they're ready. I speak under correction, but I think Notion went that route. They spent quite a bit of time perfecting their product before they really hit the mainstream and started, you know, getting people to mass on board.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think it's okay to change your mind, especially when you're doing it as an indie parent. You don't have very much time anyway. And so sometimes you do have to just power through the slog. You can't just work on it. It's not going to be fun all the time. There's going to be a slog. You just got to power through it. But if you're having a hard time from the beginning, just imagine what it's going to be, you know, a year or two later. If you're not really super excited about what you're working on, it's not going to get easier once you launch. It's going to get harder. You're going to have maybe even less motivation to iterate and build. So,
yeah. So I guess that's probably a good takeaway in terms of if you like the SaaS landscape and you're thinking about what to build, definitely don't build something that you don't have a vested interest in, that you're not really passionate about your audience and the content matter of what you're building, because the honeymoon phase is over very quickly. Like we said, when you're building all these extra bits that go into selling a product and making money out of it. So for sure, you know, you got to have passion and be excited about this thing that you're building.
And I think that could be an entire different episode. You know, do you have to be passionate about taxes in order to build a tax app? I don't think so. But what you want to be passionate about is the people that you're serving, the problem that you're solving at a high level.
Some aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly. Something to keep you going. Cool. Well, I know we have a couple of housekeeping things that we wanted to make sure people were aware of before we wrapped up here. One of them was the Indie Hacker Parent Spotlight that we wanted to kick off. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I think we have an audience now, and I think both of us feel quite strongly about the Indie Hackers community and other parents like us who maybe are building something on the side. So we've been throwing this idea around, including other parent indie hackers. So initially, like, I think at the end of the day, ideally, we'd like to have some interviews and really get some insights of people that are at the same stage as us and maybe a little bit further ahead. But in the meantime, something small that we can do is every episode to highlight a parent indie hacker who has maybe built an MVP or is just gotten started, has a little bit of revenue going, and they want to just tell people about what they're building and maybe drop a one-liner or a small piece of advice of something that they've learned along the way. So if you fit that model and you would like to have us mention you on the podcast, then send us an email at hello@indiedads.com. And hopefully we can do that every episode and give a little back to the community, and I'm sure we'll find out about all these interesting products that other parents are building. And the other thing, Brian, is you have a SaaS newsletter that is very handy. I've subscribed to Brian's SaaS, what do you call it? Founder Gems, something along those lines? SaaS Founder Gems newsletter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of really helpful information in there. I subscribe to it. So if you guys are interested, where can they get a hold of that, Brian?
Well, I appreciate the plug. This was not added by me in the agenda, but I do appreciate the plug because I'm really bad at marketing myself. If you go to my Twitter account, which is Pocket Brian, and then you go to the website version of that, pocketbrian.com, you can sign up there. I send it out every Sunday morning. Well, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, depending on where I'm at. And I try to share things that I've run across during the week. I don't have all the answers, but there's interesting things that I've run across or bookmarked over the years or things like that. Not that I have all the answers, but they're interesting to me. So I think they might be interesting to other people. And that's the approach that I'm taking. So there's usually a couple articles, podcasts, books, and things like that you might be interested in during the following week that you can look at.
Yeah, and something that you do, which I find really helpful, is you kind of give a very short summary of the takeaway of this thing that you're linking. So it's not just a bunch of links out to articles. There's like you give me a reason to say, oh, okay, well, that's the summary. That sounds interesting. And so I find it very valuable, and I'm sure a bunch of our listeners will as well.
Cool. Thank you. All right. Anything else for today?
No, I don't think so. Have we come to that part of the podcast where people get to slap their foreheads? I believe it's your turn, Brian.
Real quick before we get into that, though, let's summarize. What are you going to be working on for the next 2 weeks?
Oh, yes. Good point. Accountability. So I can't say something and then not have done it, right?
Yeah.
That's a nice thing about having an audience now. Is you have a little bit of good pressure to actually do stuff. So, yeah, as I mentioned earlier on in the episode, I'm definitely going to be looking a lot more at marketing channels. For sure, the first thing is producing like an app walkthrough video that I can link, that I can send in emails and communications and communities and things that people don't have to commit to actually downloading the app to have a look at it, even though it now has a free trial and you can get 99% of the functionality without actually signing up or purchasing anything. I still think that's really helpful. So yeah, I'll be looking at producing a video and then just like putting my toe into different communities and getting a bit more involved in the marketing side and seeing what sticks and what's helpful and what's not.
Cool.
How about you, Ryan? What does your next 2 weeks look like?
My side, I'm going to finish up this week and launch the product. I'll put a link on Twitter, so follow me there if you don't already. And then I'm going to write a few articles. I'm going to take some time to write some real, hopefully interesting and useful articles that I'll publish on the platform so that people can see what it's like, what the experience, the reader experience is. And if anyone after I launch, of course, is interested in just trying it out for free, the cost is please provide me with feedback. Then I would be happy to do that. So that's what I'll focus on over the next 2 weeks is launching, publishing a few real articles on the platform, and then getting a few people onboarded and getting some feedback from them. So I'll report back on that in 2 weeks.
Oh, nice. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks. All right. So I guess I'll go first this time since you went first last time. And this is this is an oldie but goodie, but it makes me laugh every time. What's brown and sticky?
I have no idea.
No idea. Brown and sticky. A stick.
Oh, no. That definitely qualifies, Brian. That definitely qualifies.
It might even be a kid joke. I think my kids first told me that one, but good enough for a dad joke, too.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I've been married for quite a while now. I'm almost lost count. But I've gotten to, my wife and I know each other really well, and I know that when she gets a little bit upset, that if I just put a joke in there, it lightens the mood and really gets things back on track again. But I will say that I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Brian, I love your shirt. Even though we don't have Disney Plus yet and I haven't watched Mandalorian, been dodging all the spoilers. But yeah, my wife doesn't get any of my Star Wars jokes, which is a bit of a problem. And the other night she got really, really upset. And it's like, if you crack one more of those Star Wars jokes, our marriage is done for. And I said, I'm so sorry, honey. May divorce be with you.
I'm definitely slapping my forehead, but that was good. That was good. I like the setup too. All right.
Well, if you want more dad jokes and more long-winded conversations, join us for episode 3.
Yeah. So now that we've laid the groundwork, we should be able to get down to business a little quicker, and it'll be fun.
I think so.
All right. Talk to you later.
Cheers. Bye.
If you've enjoyed this episode and want an easy way to support us, we'd love it if you reviewed this podcast on whichever platform you're using to tune in. If you'd like to ask a question, you can send an email to hello@indiedads.com or message us directly on Twitter. You can also find us at indiedads.com, where you can see show notes, links to our Twitter profiles, and product websites. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.